How's it going? Thank you for checking in. Hope you're having a great day. Today we talk with an iconic radio personality, JoJo Wright from 102.7 KISS FM in Los Angeles. Over two decades doing nights in that station, he is a Radio Music Awards Top 40 Air Personality of the Year winner, also nominated for the Marconi Award for Major Market On-Air Personality, the Billboard Magazine Top 40 Air Personality of the Year nominee. Tremendous career, has been in movies. We'll talk about his ultimate roles. Also, his fascination with the paranormal, where that came from, and what's next for this radio giant. Bring it on with JoJo Wright. The iconic JoJo Wright, known for his celebrity interviews, and now a chance to have the tables turned. So what's it like for you being the subject rather than the guy doing the interviewing?
It is, it's kind of cool in a way, because I don't have to do any prep for the interview, really, because it's, you're asking me about me, and if I don't know that, I'm pretty dumb.
Well,
it's gonna take a second for me to fight the urge tonight, you know, which I'll do anyway, just because I just naturally curious. But I'll probably start interviewing you, just kind of put a stop to it, because I'll do it.
That's fine. Hey, do you really prepare a lot for those, to talk to some singer or an actor?
Yeah, some more than others. I mean, I have a lot of interviews right now that are. I've interviewed so many people over the years that a lot of times when they come in, it's like second, third, fourth, 10th visit. So some of those are a little easier to prep for. You just have to more update than prep. And plus, in a nutshell, probably compared to some, I do a lot of prep for it. Even though sometimes when I prep, I don't use all the prep. Sometimes I don't use any of the prep.
Yeah.
But I like to be really prepared for it.
JoJo, has there been an interview that you had going in? Because you have a real calm demeanor and great rapport. So, you know, they're on the same plane as you. But have you ever had your stomach churning like, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm going to talk to him or her?
Yeah, I still get excited for them. I dig it. But it is kind of, you know, it's normal now, you know, which is it's not like, oh, my God, I'm doing an interview. It's pretty normal. It's not unusual for me to say, hey, so-and-so's coming in. Oh, cool. It's not like everybody freaks out. It's part of the gig now. But I guess, when I met, this wasn't an interview, but when I met him, I was pretty calm. I think I was pretty calm on the outside, but it was Michael Jackson.
Oh God, yeah.
That was a long time ago, obviously, but I was hosting a charity event at Neverland Ranch in 2003, and I just assumed that he wasn't going to be there. Well, I knew he would be there, but I thought he would kind of wave from a distance and have the mask on. And I was braced for that. I wasn't going to be heartbroken. But they put this big tent up, like a circus kind of a tent, on the grounds of Neverland. And we got to walk around the grounds of Neverland. It was really cool. I didn't go in the main house, but you know, we walked and we saw the amusement park looking thing, the merry-go-round, whatever it was. Been a while since I've seen. I don't remember all the specifics of that, but the little, he had some rides. Then you see the zoo over there, but I didn't. The zoo was shut down the time I got there. There was a daytime and a nighttime fundraiser that day, and I just made it for the nighttime thing. They had a movie theater over there. He had this little movie theater where they had, concession stands and all the Michael Jackson paraphernalia everywhere. And there's a couple of rooms in the back where some little kiddos who are going through a rough time, like sick, they can have little rooms for them to sit and be taken care of while they watch the movie. Then, of course, the seats in the theater. So I saw that. Oh, and the funny thing I should point out, the night this happened, there was an Oscar De La Hoya fight happening that same night. And in Michael Jackson's theater at Neverland, they were playing the fight inside his theater. So Mike Tyson was there watching the fight inside Michael Jackson's theater, which I never saw Mike Tyson, but so I found this out after the fact. But Mike Tyson was there that night. So when they got us into this big tent, this big circus-looking tent where the fans had paid to be there and raising money and all that stuff, I saw Nick Carter and Aaron Carter. Nick Carter being from Backstreet Boys, Aaron Carter's brother, a performer. I'd known them, so that wasn't odd to see them. But when the guy came up and said, can you page Mike Tyson to the tent? I thought, man, that's just something you don't hear every day. You know, just, Mike Tyson, can you come to the stage, please? Yeah, okay. But yeah, I never saw Mike. But then, He also said, when Michael comes to the stage, when Michael Jackson comes up, ask him if he wants the mic, give him the mic. This guy was giving me stage direction because, you know, it's their event and whatnot. And I said, so Michael is going to come. He's going to come up here. He goes, oh yeah. Like it was no big deal. I'm like, oh Jesus, this is crazy. So he came up. I said, Michael, would you like the mic? Yeah, no, I'm fine. And he comes up, makes an announcement. We bring a birthday cake out on stage. You know, I hand Michael the mic eventually, and he says a few things to the crowd. And then I noticed that Michael, and there's a video out there on YouTube somewhere. We couldn't bring cameras in, but of course people snuck cameras in, you know, back in the day. This is before like we had iPhones everywhere. But Michael, we brought a cake up saying happy birthday to Michael. It was his birthday in a week or two, whatever after. And he handed a little piece of cake to this little girl or guy down in the front row. And I'd always heard about Michael having cake fight, you know, cake fights in Neverland. So I'm in the back or a couple, like maybe two or three people behind Michael. And I grabbed my mic and I said, oh no, we're going to have a cake fight. Everybody look out. Just kind of having some fun, kind of baiting it, I guess. But I really didn't think a whole lot would happen. And then I see Michael Jackson turning to Nick and Aaron Carter, and they said something. I couldn't quite make it out. And then they start throwing, you know, Michael throws cake at him, and they throw cake back at Michael, and this cake starts to fly. And then Michael Jackson spins and he stops and he looks at me. You know, he's about to throw cake at me, but he stops because, you know, he doesn't know me. Should I throw cake at this guy? Is probably what he's thinking. And of course, you know, I said, you know, this sounds stupid, but I said, hit me, Michael. And he goes, are you sure? Yeah. And he whacks me with cake, and cake is everywhere, and oh, it's just madness. And my wife is actually, she's in the audience, and she's crying because she knows I'm a huge Michael fan, just huge. They eventually take Michael to the main house because he's covered in cake. And I took a shower in a guest house on Neverland. And then we went home. We took a bus of fans up and a bus of fans back. I think I had like a Kiss FM station t-shirt on after I changed clothes because I was covered in cake. And so that was probably the biggest, you know, oh my God, I'm meeting this person or that person I've had. There was one time. Isn't that crazy? It sounds like I'm making that up.
No, do you really have a Michael Jackson tattoo? Something tattooed about him on you?
Yeah, I got, if you can't quite see. Can you see the Michael Jackson logo right there? His feet right there?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure if they can. I'm not sure I can't. The little screen is so small there. Let me see here. Oh, they can't. Sorry, wrong way. Well, it's so small I can't tell if I'm zeroed in or not. But that's a Michael Jackson, his feet, his logo right there. Then I have a Captain EO tattoo. I don't know if you can see that at all.
I can, yeah.
From the Disneyland ride, which Captain EO is Michael Jackson. That was a feature down at Disneyland for quite a while. It's not there now, but it was there for quite a while. So that I got those tats after that, several years after that. But that was pretty wild. Probably another one that comes to mind was, and I didn't speak to him in person, but I was downstairs getting some food. You know, the radio station is, you know, on the fifth floor in Burbank. And I was downstairs getting a quick bite. And I get a call that says, this is before he was president, but they said, Barack Obama's calling. It was when the Democratic primaries, when he was, you know, going up against Hillary the first go around. And he was just pushing people to get out and vote, just as a candidate does. But even though he wasn't president, and it was still early in the process, you kind of knew something special was going on. So it's Barack Obama's calling. Can you come up here real quick? I'm like, oh my God. So I spit out the food. Pew. We take off. We go upstairs. And I was talking with a friend of mine who's producing the show named Ian. He says, I said, all right, Ian, I don't do politics ever. What do we got here? You know, he goes, cause he's not calling me to talk like CNN. He's calling just to get people to vote, you know? So, you know, watch people go get out and vote. People are lazy, you know, why get off the couch, that typical stuff, you know, but I'm obsessed with UFOs and paranormal and all that stuff. And so Ian says, make sure to ask him a UFO question, like Area 51. Like, oh my God, it's a great idea. So, you know, we toy around with this and that. And he was really, really fun. It's super nice. And I said, all right, Senator Obama. And there's tape of this somewhere. I can't find the audio, but I swear I'm not lying. I said, if you are elected president, is there a chance I could get access to Area 51? And this is way before Jimmy Kimmel asked him it. And he kind of laughed and he said, well, I don't want to make promises. I don't want to sound like a typical politician and make promises I can't keep. Laugh, laugh, laugh. get out and vote, you know, all right. That. So that's kind of where it went. But those are the two that really, really stick in my head. There's a lot of other ones, I'm sure, but that's the first two that comes to mind.
As a huge Michael Jackson fan, what was it like for you and where were you when you found out that he was dying?
I was actually here at our house. It was 2 days before my daughter was born, about a year ago. She was turning a year, basically. We were having her baptism right around that time. So I'd taken the day off, and it's one of those things, you know, and like my mother-in-law was in town, or we're going to go to the church and do all the little ceremony and just real, you know, real special. And then, but I'd taken the night off of the radio, and we get the word. I think I saw it post up on my, you know, on the phone, TMZ is reporting Michael Jackson may have died or something like that. And then you start clicking on CNN and they're speculating, but nobody had confirmed it at that point. And normally I would just go back to the radio station. I took a day off, but I'm going back up, but you can't when it's your daughter's, you know, that's one of those days you can't, all right, see you later. Can't do that. So I'm sitting at the house and I catch it on TV and start following the TMZ updates like the rest of us. And it was a shocker, man. I can't, you know, that was a shock for everyone, obviously. But, you know, when TMZ reported it before anyone else, so you're thinking, God, maybe TMZ's wrong. Cause they jumped on it early, which is one of the things that probably put TMZ really on the map, is how they caught that. That was such a big story and they confirmed it first. Although if they would have been wrong, they'd have had a lot of egg on their face, but they, you know, they got it right. I talked to, Harvey, 11. My wife in the other, she's whispered that name to me, so she gets credit for that. But Harvey, I talked to him maybe years after that. I don't know Harvey at all, but somehow I got linked up with an interview with him. And I said, Harvey, I know this is old news, like this is 10 years ago, whatever it is, but tell me how you knew, because you had to green light that confirmation. How did you know that was, because nobody else was reporting it when you reported it? And he said he was on the phone with somebody, I want to say at the hospital or whatnot, and he had his finger over the button. He's like, you swear to me, this is not, you know, this has to be true before I push this button. Do I have your word? And they said, and they gave him the confirmation that it was real. So he pushed the button, took a chance that his source was correct. And sure enough, it was. So I guess they got the story, but man, it was, that was just sad. I went to the funeral at Staples Center. You know, they reached out to a couple of media outlets. And of course, when Kiss FM or iHeart, you know, got the word on that, they of course called me up because they know I'm the big MJ fan. And at that point I was calling a lot of radio stations around the country, you know, just giving them my two cents on it, just because, you know, they wanted people to talk about it from LA, or people who had, you know, encounters with them, which I'd only met them once, but I was just a big fan. So I gave a lot of reports around the country at that point. It was an odd time, man. He was at that, in my opinion, the greatest entertainer of all time. You know, I'm sure you could throw a few on that conversation, but he, in my opinion, was the best for sure. And, but that's my MJ story. I've talked to Janet recently, you know, and I've become friends with some of his nephews. I know his nephew, Austin Brown, who is the son of Reby. Reby Jackson is one of the, you know, siblings, Reby, Janet, Latoya, Michael, all, you know, everybody. And I've become friends with Austin, who is Reby's son. He was actually there when I got the tattoo, the Michael Jackson tattoo. And I've been over to host a few Halloween parties at the Encino, at the Encino house, the Havenhurst house, which is where the family basically grew up. But they don't live, like Ms. Catherine Jackson, which I haven't met. She used to live there, but they don't live there now. But when you see all the pictures of the Jacksons, you know, living in L.A. in the early 70s or 80s, that's the house. And I've been there like a handful of times. And I'm sitting there once during this Halloween party, and Taj. I'm friends with Taj, Terrell, and TJ a little bit. You know, they're Tito's kids. I don't know them super well, but, you know, a little bit. And they called me up and invited me to their Halloween thing. I'm like, oh, my God, sure. But I'm sitting there, and he's showing me around. And it's kind of an outside little patio thing where we're at. And he says, you see those stairs right there? Kind of an outdoor staircase leading up to a second-level room. I'm like, yeah. He goes, that's Michael's room. I'm like, oh, okay, no big deal. That's just, you know. and I never walked up in there. I know they had a haunted house in that little part. So I never walked into that Michael room, I don't think. But it's just so surreal. I mean, for them, it's just where they live at and they've grown up with it. But for me, I'm at this Jackson family or Jackson, you know, Halloween party. Michael Jackson music playing in the background for obvious reasons. And just sitting there, it's so full circle because I recall as a kid, my mom taking us on a vacation and I sat outside those gates going, man, Michael Jackson lives in there. That's cool. And here now I'm inside looking out going, man, this is just nuts. And me and my wife walk out. We're going to get our car. And we see a couple of guys, you know, older guys sitting over there chit-chatting. And she goes, you know who that is, don't you? I'm like, yep. Pretty much the Jackson 5 sitting over there. It wasn't all of them, but it was like, I think it was Randy and Tito, I think. I mean, I could be wrong with that, but it was a couple of members of the old Jacksons or Jackson 5. And it was just, for me personally, you know, it was just super cool.
You've got this great, you know, young look that you've had forever. I saw the 10-year challenge that people do, and your 10-year picture from 10 years ago looks almost like it does now. Do you feel like your job has kept you young, being around young, energetic people?
Maybe so. I don't know. I mean, I tell people I used to joke that I'm a vampire, but I'm starting to think that might be true. Got to double check a few things. Maybe something's up, but I think in a way maybe it has, you know, and the music industry and the, you know, radio and whatever, I guess for some people they live that hard life of partying and whatnot. And maybe hard living will age you. But man, I just, you know, I'm a pretty boring dude. I go to work and come home and that's pretty much it. It's an exciting job, but I don't live that party lifestyle. So maybe that helps some too. But I think you might be right. I think it's a mindset in a way. Just, you know, I don't feel old. I'm older obviously than I used to be, clearly. But I think, you know, that maybe there's something to that, what you're saying. Hanging around just a youthful mindset keeps you young in a way. Although I still see people in this same mindset getting older than I am. So, you know, whatever. But anyway, I think you might be right.
I think hopefully. So too. Now you've been over there like 21 years at KISS. Is that right?
Yep. Right about 2021. Yeah. Something like that. I started in late. People ask me when I start, I usually say 98 at KISS in Los Angeles, but technically it was late 97. But when I usually give a quick answer, it's 98. Cause that's when I did the full year of 98, but yeah. So 21, 20, whatever that is years.
Wow.
And, it's just nuts, man. Just, I was talking to somebody as I'm walking through the halls the other day, like, oh my God, I've been here forever. And I love working there. It's just, you know, not that I don't want to expand and do other stuff. And, you know, I've done some expansion here and there, but we're doing it as we speak, but that's my bread and butter. It's just that radio thing. It's just been it's my job and a little bit of an obsession too. And I just dig it.
You went from San Francisco to Wild, because I worked with you back in the day. You went down there. You were doing overnights for a while, right?
Yeah, at KISS, when I came in, I did overnights for the first 4 or 5 months, something like that. And the plan was, when I came down, to do overnights until they switched us. Like, all right, JoJo, we're going to bring you down here, do overnights. Then we're going to put you on either afternoons or nights, was the plan. And then when I got down here, the program director, you know, the boss that was going to do that got fired. So I thought, oh man, I am stuck doing overnights. But then the new PD came in, did the switch, and, you know, put me on at nights. And that's when everything really started to click. So I did overnights for about 4 or 5 months, you know, which was kind of the plan, but I didn't, you know, but I thought for a second the plan had gone bad. So luckily everything turned out. That was scary for a second. Like, oh God, here I got came all the way down here for that. So luckily that worked out.
When you first went down there, I'd heard that you were doing overnight so you could have your days free to audition for stuff and, you know, try to break into TV and get into movies like that. So you'd be willing to work late at night in order to have that trade-off of having days free.
That's true. Yeah. Which I did some auditions and some gigs here and there and whatnot, but I still want to do TV, but I just auditioning. I guess I didn't. Maybe I'm not the best actor. I don't know. Whatever. But
oh, come on. Bring it on. You were unbelievable.
Brittany Allen just farted.
I was so, you know what? How can I not? Did I not? I should have got some sort of award for that. I mean, what, come on now. People's Choice, something.
Oh.
That was.
So, Justin Bieber's "Love Me," you were sensational.
Was there a clip of me in the Bieber video? Is that what it was?
Yeah, it was about 2 seconds. It was short role, but meaningful. You embraced it and obviously brought everything to the table.
Yes, I knew it. Oh my God. Thank God for that. Made my career. But yeah, I did some TV stuff and I've done some little things here and there, but the Bring It On thing is probably the funniest. Little goofy move. Lately, I've been doing I got linked up with I had a manager at one point, a really good guy named Andy. I still talk to Andy all the time. But Andy Tenenbaum. So Andy watched this, hey. But he had a buddy. He goes, hey, these guys, they do these Christmas movies. And keep in mind, I'm not trying to be an actor. It's just, I'm not going auditions. You know, I think I'll jump into the voiceover world here real soon. We just finished the voiceover, like, animation demo and whatnot. But I'm not going out for TV auditions as far as actors and stuff. Like, I just hate it. It's just the audition process. It's just not fun. And I don't know. But Andy called up and said, hey, these guys, they want you to be in some Christmas movie. They would be in a Christmas movie. Like, all right, what are they thinking? Well, you play some little part, and they can shoot it in like 1 or 2 days. And like, all right. And so I go do this one movie. I forget what it was called, but, you know, it's always something cheesy.
Royal Christmas Ball? Was that the one?
There's been a couple. That's probably one of them. I do honestly forget some of the titles. And to be honest, when I'm making them at times, I don't know the title. It's just, you know, they just have some working title, you know, on the call sheet. But I'll go on and do some bit part. Like one year I was a hotel clerk that had a cold, and, you know, and then they were, whatever. I recall they had to sneeze, you know, a lot. And then just a little rant. I was a TV host that I was the main character could read my mind, and she could tell my evil thoughts, what I was thinking during this, you know, whatever. But they keep calling me like every probably like year or so, they'll call me and say, hey, do you want to do another TV thing? I'm like, oh, all right. So I'll go do some random. I mean, they're just awful, you know, but cheesy awful.
The Christmas list on IMDb: Christmas Twister, All I Want for Christmas, A Christmas Mystery, and A Royal Christmas Ball.
Dude, the Christmas Twister one, I'm a big fan of the TV show X-Files. Have you ever watched X-Files?
Of course.
And there's a character named, I guess he was, when Fox and Mulder would leave an X on the outside of a room, like that's the signal for Mr. X to come in and give you top secret info. Well, when I was in Christmas Twister, I was playing not a cameraman, but I get, you know, in the control room for a TV show, like if you're in a news studio where they're shooting at like the 10 o'clock news, there's the people in the newsroom running the cameras and whatever. I was one of the guys, you know, in that back room, kind of in that camera room. And the lead camera guy was Mr. X. So I'm sitting there with this guy, Mr. X. He was in this Christmas Twister too. I thought that was cool. So I'm sitting there with him. I'm like, and I took a picture with him, and I'm like, Dina, I sent it to my wife. Look at what do I know this dude from? She goes, that's the guy from X-Files. I'm like, holy crap. So I went back in there and started chatting with him about X-Files and everything. We had it was fun. And the movies are cool. I mean, just, they are what they are, just a little bit peaked, you know. But it's fun for people to joke with me, like, hey, Jojo, I saw you on TV looking like an idiot. I'm like, ah, you know. But it's they're fun to do as long as they're, you know, fit within the schedule. And I don't make you don't make any money on those things, but why not? But I've done done a couple little acting gigs, you know, like I did that gig. I told you where I was talking to Dave off camera here. I did a movie called, it initially was called The Helpers, but there's another title for it now. It's called No Vacancy. It's on Amazon Prime right now. Look up No Vacancy.
You were Phil in that one, 2012.
Oh, there we go. It was a horror movie, and I was, you know, one of the leads in that, I guess you could call it. I had a lot of parts in that one. But I was the guy, you know, there's always a guy in a horror movie that runs around with a video camera, you know, taping it. I'm going to document it. And of course, you catch all the murders on the camera. We shot that. We were freezing when we shot that movie, somewhere in Lancaster. Dallas Lovato was in that, who is Demi's sister. And I got my head, not to give out the secret plot, but I get my head chopped off. Yeah, the way that whole movie happened was, do you know there's an R&B singer and actor named Marcus Houston? I met him through music, and I was doing an interview with Marcus, and he happened to mention on the radio that he was working on some movies and this and that. I'm like, Marcus, let me stop you there. One of these days, I want to get killed in a horror movie. I mean, I don't know if you have any horror movies coming up, but I want to get, I mean, I want to get just railed. I'm a horror movie fan. I want to get railed, but I don't want to be just like a prop, just a random dead body. You know, I want to have a few lines so the audience feels for me a little bit. And, you know, so I just want to show up, have makeup splattered on me, and then leave and never say a word. I want to have a part and then die. He goes, all right, let me think on that, you know? And I thought he was just goofing around. Sure enough, he calls me like, you know, 4 or 5 days later, says, I think we got something for you. Like, you're kidding. So that's how that whole thing happened. And the guy, the director and producer that created, remember the dance movie called You Got Served?
I love You Got Served.
Yeah, well, Chris Stokes is the director for You Got Served, and he's the one that shot this movie I'm telling you about. And so we went up there and shot this movie, and they made a mold of my head, because when they chopped my head had to come off. So they made this mold of my head, and when they're putting the plaster on, they put Vaseline on your face so they can take this stuff off. It's a little easier, but I guess they didn't put enough Vaseline on my eyes, and it pretty much almost pulled my eyelashes out. It was painful. We got through it just little by little. See a picture of me. My God, I look terrible. It just almost pulled my eyelashes out. But we, you know, luckily we got all the stuff off, and they had the mold in my head, and it was fine. And oddly enough, the same day they did the mold in my head, you know, the rapper Mac Miller, who just passed away, that was my first interview with him that day after the mold was getting taken off my face. He was waiting for me at the station, and he was on his way, and we had to call the label and say, just tell Mac to hang on. I'm going through a bit of a hairdo here. They're pulling my eyelashes out as we speak. We should be there soon, but just give me a break. Give me a second here. I'm so sorry. And so Mac, he was super nice, and he waited for us to finish this whole thing. So I show up there later with I looked like I was been through a battle. And Mac Miller was nicest guy ever. I guess I'll segue into that. But so I survived the face thing. All cool. And the movie is on Amazon Prime. It's called, like I said, it was No Vacancy. I'm not trying to push the movie. Don't get it.
It's Prime awesome. Video. I'll get it. I'll watch it.
It's fast forward when we get chopped. It's pretty crazy. That's when I met Mac Miller. I didn't know Mac well, but I met him a couple of times. And just a real nice, super kind, you know, just really genuine dude. And it was really sad to see what happened to him the other day, you know. I didn't know him well, but I'd met him a couple of times, and it was just, wow, could not believe that. So that's a crazy segue from getting, you know, shooting a movie and my head chopped off to Mac. But God, this is weird. Once again, it sounds like I'm making this stuff up,
no,
but I'm really not. It's just wild.
You've had such a full and amazing career down there. Now, if you've had a chance to be an actor, and maybe you had the hookup with the right producer, Spielberg, what kind of role do you think would be best for JoJo? If I'm going to star in something, I could be this kind of a guy. I mean, are you a badass? Are you the romantic comedy guy, Hugh Grant type? What would be the great JoJo role?
I think I'm the guy next door, kind of in a lot of ways, you know. I think the role that would suit me the best, if I had timed it, like if I did something, like when I shot that one movie, I mean, granted, it's just a little taste of the acting world. These actors that do it, that's their full-time job. But it's rough for me to go shoot something and then have to go do a radio show at night. It's just back and forth. If I had time to sink into it, I'd love to do like my favorite kind of stuff is sci-fi. So I'd love to do a sci-fi movie or a horror movie. I'd love to do a horror movie, like a real high grade horror movie. I would love that. But I think the role that would probably be best for me would be like a war movie, like a World War II, where I could really get in the mud. Cause I think I think Tom Hanks said this once, and I think it's easier for me. It's easy to act cold and wet when you're cold and wet. So if you're shooting a war movie in the mud, you're in the mud.
Right.
And it's just, I don't know, I would find that kind of, you could almost just be, I don't know, it'd be a nice challenge to see if you could almost survive that, like Saving Private Ryan boot camp they went through to become those soldiers before they shot that. That'd be a neat challenge. It would probably, as I say this, it would probably be living hell to go through it, because just madness. But to kind of put yourself through that kind of drama and then shoot a movie about going through what you just went through, you know, adding you know, the script and whatnot to it and the realistic storylines and all that stuff. But that'd be fun. I would really like a war movie. That'd be pretty neat.
Well, you used the description Guy Next Door, which I think is kind of your key to success on the radio, that you're so accessible that you're just this real dude. Do you think that's the case? Like, hey, why have you lasted 21 years in L.A. as a popular night jock?
I think it's something to do with that. You know, I think that, and this is not, I think I'm likable, and I think I'm just genuine and vulnerable and all that stuff. I don't try to be super something super fancy. Like, I've never, and I'd like to say I did this on purpose, but I think it kind of happened almost by accident, but it was just a great strategy, an accidental strategy, is, I was never the cool guy. You know, I'm never the super good looking, super cool guy, but I was just super genuine, and being yourself and being genuine and being just, you know, a nice dude has more longevity than being the cool guy and super this and that, and that wears off and you're done. But if you're just super genuine and yourself and just nice, and I think people like me. I think I like people and they like me for whatever reason. I'm real friendly. I'm a friendly dude. I'm real shy too, but on the air, I'm not, obviously. But I think a lot of that, I think a lot of those vulnerabilities and being just yourself and being a nice guy kind of translate. And I think that's right. I think that's why. I think there's some unique, I think I have a couple of eccentric, what's the word I'm looking for? A few eccentric
qualities,
hobbies.
Hey, I want to ask you about that, because the paranormal thing, it's all over your Instagram and who you are. And why, dude? Where did that come from?
That is something I've had that even before I met you. I did some stuff like this in San Francisco when I was there a while back. And granted, I wasn't in San Francisco for 20 years, so I get it. But I think I've always loved the paranormal, and it's probably an extension of the sci-fi world and all that stuff like that. But my mom, when we were kids, this is what I think. I'm not sure if this is even true, but I think the reason one of the reasons I fell in love with the paranormal, my mom would take us, me and my sister, on picnics. She just thought it was a nice place to sit and have lunch. She'd go to Subway or KFC, and we'd eat, you know, get our little meal, and she'd take us to graveyards, and we would go sit and eat outside the graveyard and whatever. We weren't visiting like Uncle So and So that we miss and love. Nothing like that. It was just a place outdoors, kind of chill. And I would walk around the graveyard thinking, man, this is fascinating, yet scary. And man, it just something very creepy about it. So I think maybe something to do with that really got me interested in it, you know. And I think that's one of the things, I guess, those eccentric hobbies that people find interesting from time to time, along with being a normal dude outside of that. I don't know what it is about that. I just really, I've been to so many haunted houses and ghost hunts and this and that, and it's pretty fascinating stuff. You know, and there's ghost shows all over TV. It's a niche kind of a thing, but it's also kind of a mass appeal in a way too. Everybody has that, oh my God, don't go into that house at the end of the street when you're a kid, or look out for this, or do you believe in that? And then of course everybody, you know, the religions of the world, you know, it kind of loosely ties in somewhere. So I think everybody's a little curious, I think. And that's why it's kind of working well right now on TV and whatnot. But I've loved it forever.
Well, if it's a hobby, what kind of things do you do? Like if I have a guitar, I'm going to practice it. I mean, what would you do as a practicing paranormalist?
You know, you look for places to go visit. Like I have a couple of buddies who are into the whole, they have, I mean, they're more serious than I am. I hate to admit, but they, I have a couple of buddies who, like, I met this one guy who writes books. His name is Rob Ladarsky. He's a little nutty. You know, I'll tell him he could find a ghost in a plastic bag. You know, he can see ghosts everywhere, according to him. So he's a little eccentric, more than I am. But he has a ghost team. There's another team called Paranormal EXP, which they have all the gadgets and whatnot. And if somebody calls me with a story, you know, I'll hit those two guys up, or those two crews up, and we'll go check a spot out. And so it doesn't happen a lot. But when we can get them all together, certainly around Halloween, we'll do it. But I think now that I'm doing this podcast, we're going to do a few live tapings. I'm going to bring those guys out quite a bit more. But we'll go check on a location or two. An example of there's this one guy that called me one night, and he was an EMT. So, you know, he's, you know, dealing with, you know, he, not a doctor, EMT. He gets called out with, you know, with the ambulance. Oh my God, there's a big emergency. Go help these people. So you, so not that EMTs can't fake stuff. They're humans. You know, they can be bad, terrible EMTs too. But when you think of an EMT, you think of a guy that's dealt with some high pressure situations. So I thought there was a little bit of credibility there. But he told me this story where he wakes up one night, and there's basically a hallway between him and his roommate's door. He wakes up one night, and he hears somebody kind of jiggling around in the hallway, and he opens the door, and he sees at the opposite end of the hallway, he sees a guy trying to get into his roommate's door. It's not his roommate. And he's like, what the heck? And his dog would normally jump out and go after anybody, because his dog is one of those kind of like bark at everything kind of dog. Dog saw it and backed up. And this guy's like, what the heck? So he said, excuse me, sir, can I help you? And this guy turned around, made a rush toward him. And he's like, oh my God. And he goes to put his hands up like he's going to fight or block him or whatever. Poof, gone. So we go to this dude's house, and of course the team set up all the gadgets and whatnot. We didn't see anything, obviously, because nothing ever happens when you want it to. But I still kind of believe him. I still kind of believe him. It was a really compelling story. And I think most of these stories, because you're never going to be able to recreate it or see what they saw, it just comes down to, do you believe the witness? And I kind of believe him. The UFO stories, when you have a military pilot with a track record that's just impeccable, telling you stuff he saw in the air that doesn't match anything he knows he's an expert on airplanes, and he knows what he's been flying for years, and he sees this, this, and this. Mike, you know, that's about as much credibility as you're going to get aside from seeing this thing yourself. So I find that stuff just real fascinating and real interesting. I'm obsessed with a TV show now called Project Blue Book. It's just out now on the History Channel. And Project Blue Book was an organization in the government in the 30s, 40s, 50s, I guess it was, or 30s, 40s, that they would investigate UFO encounters and real stories. And they would try to discredit most of them, obviously. All the episodes on Project Blue Book are based on real stories of the real Project Blue Book. And I just tweeted that the other night. I'm like, oh my God, who's watching Project Blue Book? This is crazy. And one of the actors hit me back. He says, man, I'm glad you're liking the show. Then the History Channel tweeted back and says, oh my God, love it. You know, then I got an email from the publicist of History Channel. Said, hey, we want to have those guys. One of the actors wants to come in and talk about this and that and whatever. So I'm going to bring him in on the podcast. We're trying to work out the date for him to come in. So, which I think is kind of cool. Normally I do a lot of music stuff, obviously, but every now and then we'll have an actor come in, and this is one of those times where maybe we'll have an actor drop by. So that's kind of neat. But the other actor in that, there's a guy in there that, do you watch Game of Thrones, Dave?
Oh yes, love it.
The guy who plays Littlefinger.
Oh yeah,
in Game of Thrones, he's in Project Blue Book. So it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. So I hope it answers the question. I don't know if it does or not.
No, it absolutely did. Do you anything with this kind of stuff on the radio?
All the time. All the time. Every Halloween I'll do, you know, a ghost investigation on the radio for sure. That's been a mainstay for about 15 years. We'll do, you know, some topics on throughout the year for on stuff like that, ghost encounters, UFO encounters, and people call us some crazy stories. That's where I get a lot of the fuel for the podcast. It's just people calling me up, and then artists will come through and tell me stories as well. I host the iHeartRadio Countdown, which goes to all the pop stations in iHeart and a few international outlets. And when these artists come in, if they have a story, I'll hold them over for the podcast, and they'll tell the story, you know, on the podcast as well. And sometimes we'll put it on the iHeart Countdown too, little blurbs and this and that. But yeah, I do a lot of it throughout the year. It's very fascinating to me. People, you know, if you've been listening to me for any length of time, you know that I have a real crazy obsession with it. So it's nothing. It's not just a Halloween gig. It's a year-round thing for me.
Now, you know, Strawberry up in Seattle, right? because he apologizes. He's still dealing with pain and his therapist about screwing up a Halloween stunt that you did on the radio.
He was famous for his Halloween broadcast. He would go to like a spooky place or a haunted mansion or whatever. He would have a seance and stuff like this. And so he was doing this live broadcast from some haunted location in the Bay Area. And at a certain point, when he was out on location and I was back in the radio station, like running the boards, as it's called, when he said like there was a certain keyword, I was supposed to hit this pre-produced sound effect segment of him essentially like getting abducted by a ghost or something. I forget what it was about, but it was this thing that he had worked weeks on, and it was this pre-produced, you know, element that I was supposed to hit. And it plays on the radio and everybody freaks out thinking JoJo just got attacked or abducted by a ghost. So it played, and then I went into commercials, and then he called me in the studio. And when I picked up the phone, somehow our conversation started going out over the radio, and I was like, yeah, hey, JoJo, it sounded really good. I'm sure everybody believes it. Oh, yeah. So he and I are talking about how good we just faked everybody out. Meanwhile, I hear somebody running down the hallway, and the studio door bursts open, and it's my boss. And he's like, you're on the air. You're on the air. And he's giving me like the cut signal. And I'm like, hold on, JoJo. I think we're on the air. What? We're on the air? And so my boss runs over to me, and there was some switch that I didn't know was on, was flipped on. So he reached over and flipped the switch off. And in like 30 seconds, I blew 2 weeks of preparation and a 4-hour broadcast. I mean, just like in 30 seconds. And I've apologized to him 5, 10, 15 years later, and it still irks me.
Yeah, I think there's one. I think I've done a couple of shows where I'm like, where did JoJo go? And I just wanted to leave a little drama.
It's been haunting him for years.
Tell him to relax. It's okay. You know, every now and then you got to put something out there that if nothing kind of happens, you got to zing the audience with something. I've had times where, you know, you want to have certain things planned so the audience just doesn't get bored because you're doing a live radio show. But, one year I had a psychic. This psychic lady came out. We were at this place called the Ambassador Hotel, which doesn't exist anymore, but that's where RFK got shot at years ago. And we had this psychic and her assistant. The psychic was probably 60, and her assistant was probably 30. So, you know, big age difference. And they bring this Ouija board out. They start doing this Ouija board thing. And they light candles and put them around the Ouija board. I'm thinking, oh, my God, what are we doing? And something happens where the spirit supposedly possesses this guy, which I don't know. I didn't quite buy it. But the young guy gets possessed. And this is all on the radio. And he dives over the Ouija board and basically jumps on his 60-year-old-ish, maybe even older, psychic. So I'm thinking, man, he's going to hurt her, you know? And then they run off into another room, and, you know, all the candles, they're all over the floor. Like, you see a little fire starting to, you know, like, we're going to catch the carpet on fire. So I'm diving over the carpet trying to put the fire out. And because I keep thinking in my head, we signed all these insurance releases, you know, I will not do this and that. And meanwhile, the carpet is, you know, it didn't catch on fire, but if we didn't put it out real quick, you know, oh my God. So we got that all taken care of. And I go out there, and they're in the hallway, and they're both freaking out, the psychic and her assistant. And he lifts up his shirt, and he's like, man, look, I got scratches on my – something scratched me. Well, you know, great story. It sounded good on the radio, and I went with it for the radio. But, you know, playing real skeptic, I mean, clearly they ran into the hallway, and then she scratched his back. I mean, what else – I mean, I don't know. That's, you know, I like to have fun with the audience and make them, and I like it to be true, but every now and then you just go with it, and something happens crazy, you just go with it. But that one, yeah. The only thing that made me kind of second guess that was, why is a 30-year-old guy tackling a 60-year-old woman? You're not afraid she's going to get hurt, you know? So I don't know. Who knows?
Have you ever done anything, JoJo, on the radio that after it was over, it's like, I can't believe I said that, or I can't believe I did that, or WTF?
I can't think of one. I'm sure there's just a list of things I've done that, why did I do or say that? I think the time where I did the, and I've done this before, and in theory it's good, but I did the police officer comes in and you do the, take a shot of alcohol for, you know, over an hour period, and you do it like to promote not drinking and driving. How quick can you go from normal to legally drunk and, you know, all that fun stuff. They give you the breathalyzer. But at this time, I recall I was into, I just love pina coladas. I thought the pina colada was so great. Of course. So as opposed to taking a shot, I would drink pina colada. And awful idea, because I just got so sick that night off drinking all those pina coladas. Where normally you get drunker, quicker for the breathalyzer test, just taking just a shot of something strong and small, as opposed to drinking all this liquid of the pina coladas. You can imagine that was just an awful scene, and it was just terrible. So if I ever do that drunk test again, which I'm not opposed to, it's funny on the radio. You get a little drunk, you read the tongue twisters, you take the breathalyzer test, look how drunk you are, you shouldn't drink and drive. It's funny. And of course, you know, you have a designated driver, all this, but I'm not going to do pina coladas, man. I just got so sick. It was awful. So that's probably the one that comes to mind. Although there's plenty more, I'm sure.
Hey, your family life, you got this wife you've had forever, Dina, and your daughter who was born, June 27, 2008. What has having that strong family meant to you in a profession that's not really friendly to families? You know, not a lot of stability in radio.
You know, Dina, I met her in radio. She was, I met her in Charlotte at a station. It was WCKZ. And I met her in radio. So she gets the biz. She was more on the marketing side. And she's just, you know, she doesn't get wrapped up in she finds it fun like any of us do, but she definitely doesn't get wrapped up in the, oh my God, this and that, you know. It's she looks at it as a job and it's fun, and she's very supportive, and she keeps me grounded, you know, when I hit a low point, she you know, picks me up and all that stuff. And then it's become even, you know, Sophie, she's 10 now, or 10 and a half, as she'll tell you. She gets it now. And she's like, when she was first born, I recall, like, you know, or not for when she was young, I recall telling her once, hey, I'm going to go talk to Justin Bieber today. You want to go meet him? You want to go say hi? And she was really young. And she kind of looked at me and she goes, no, but, I could use some more batteries for my Justin Bieber toothbrush. So that was her concern, is getting batteries for that. But now she gets it, and she's met a lot of people, and she thinks it's really cool. And she, you know, she sees the advantages of the job. She's met everybody from Ariana Grande to Selena Gomez to, you know, the Fifth Harmony girls. They've kissed all over her. They love her, you know, when they were as a group. Now, of course, they're not. They're solo, but same thing. She met Marshmello, and, you know, with the helmet on, and Marshmello, you know, with his helmet on, he looked down and said, hey, how you doing? And she was freaked out. She's like, oh my God, he talks. So she met Marshmello and BB Rexha. She loves BB. She met Shawn Mendes. I forget who she met. I think she met Shawn Mendes the other day, whoever. And just had a ball. So she gets it now, and her friends get to come backstage. I brought her on stage a couple of times, introducing some groups at our Wango Tango concerts. And she really loves that. I don't know. It's as outlandish as the job is, or seems to be, and it is in a lot of ways. But it's just, I don't know. We're pretty normal. We're super boring, but I kind of like that. You know, I like the separation of crazy, weird job, or I don't even consider it weird anymore. It's just the job. And then just coming home and watching TV and trying to get in shape and getting a few tattoos here and there. So that's pretty much it.
Did becoming a dad change you at all?
It must have, you know. I don't know. I think it makes you. I'm pretty driven as is, but in a good way. I'm not like super, you know. But I think it really makes you focus on, man, this is, you got, you know, no turning back now. I mean, it gets serious, because she depends on you for everything. So I think it may just made me focus even more. But especially in the early days, makes us real tired because kids are exhausting. So, you know, oh my God. But she's a good kid. So, you know, all that stuff.
Lucky to have a dad like you. I think the middle school years will make you lose your mind.
Probably. So do you have kids, Dave?
Oh gosh. My daughter is long removed from middle school. So she's 27 and my son's 24. So I've been through all of it. So if you want, you know, any advice or did this happen to you, I'll guarantee you, you know, there's nothing that you haven't experienced or will experience that I haven't been a part of.
Oh, then, I'll definitely hit you up. Like, Dave, she's got a boyfriend. How do I stop this? You know,
yeah.
One of those things, you know? Oh my God.
There was
I will definitely hit you up on that.
Oh God, JoJo, when she was almost 16, and we were having some drama at home, I told her, I go, hey, look, you know, we need to make some changes around here. One of us isn't going to make it to your 16 because I'll either kill you or I'll kill myself. But one of us has to go. One of us has to go.
I'm gonna bank that one away. Like, hey, threaten death. Perfect.
I don't know if that is something that any therapist would recommend, but it's just what I felt at the time.
Goodness. Well, I guess you guys made it through that, so that's good. Oh, by the way, not to interview you, but what are you doing? I saw you, maybe this is a couple of weeks ago, but I saw you taking dance classes.
Oh, gosh. That's my
choreography. What was that?
That's my favorite hobby. Last year, I got asked to be a part of the local Dancing with the Stars competition in this area. And so I said yes, just like that. So I started to take lessons. And over the course of 4 months, I got myself prepared where I won that competition. And I've been going at it ever since. So I performed with my teacher last summer doing Dirty Dancing at the Alameda County Fair. I was Patrick Swayze. And it's just a great release. You know, like people do yoga or they meditate or they surf or whatever they do to kind of cleanse themselves. For me, there's nothing like putting on my dance shoes and just letting it go.
Oh my God. And another thing I'll always remember about you, it was you call a lot of sports. It's what you do. That's your thing, you know? Yeah. And I recall going to some game with you. I don't know what game it was, but you were doing basketball and Ken James, you were the play-by-play. He was the color guy. And I don't know what I think I was just there watching. I don't think I was on the radio with you guys. I think I was just there, I think. But I recall sitting there with you guys calling some game. And I know that Stephon Marbury was playing.
Oh, gosh, yeah, that was at San Jose Arena. Santa Clara was playing Georgia Tech.
Who's the other guy, the other point guard that?
He was with the Lakers, Steve Nash.
Steve Nash, oh, my God, yeah. I recall those two playing. And that's what stuck in my head. And it was interesting to watch you do that. You know, that was pretty neat. A long time ago.
Oh gosh,
that was really cool.
That was 1995, that game.
Wow. That must have been right when I started Yeah, I was in San Francisco for like 2 or 3 years maybe, I guess, including when I went to Philly and came back. But yeah, I just remember that game for some reason, you know. And I think I was trying to help you guys do something. Like when something would happen, I'd search for some whatever it was. I'm like, oh my God, I'm doing a terrible job. What's going on here?
Our producer.
I was your producer. That was so funny. Oh my God, just trying to. That's wild. You have to know a lot of. You have to be quick with that. Basketball moves so fast, man. Especially if it's a team you don't know that well. Like if you're calling NFL football, you know you pretty much know all the players pretty much off the top of your head because you cover it so well. And there's 32 teams and the players, certainly the stars stay. I mean, Tom Brady's going to be – you don't have to know those guys. But if you're talking like high school, college basketball, certainly you don't know any of the players. My God. Yeah. I mean, that's just – that's rough.
High school, I'd say, is the toughest because you've never seen or heard any of these kids before. So you're having to, you know, cram and pretend that you know everything about, you know, the entire rosters by the time you get to Friday's, you know, opening kickoff. So that's a challenge. But I think what you do is remarkable.
Well, dude, thank you, man. Thank you. Hope I covered everything.
Oh, gosh.
You,
No, hey, I wanted to ask you, you've done nights for how many years? When you go back to Houston, Charlotte, San Francisco, and then Kiss FM, what, 30 years?
Yeah, probably 30. You know, I know I've been at Kiss a long time, but all the other stations are kind of quicker hits, you know? My wife's throwing things at me. but the all the other, say, probably close to 30.
Had you ever wanted to do another shift? Hey, I want to do afternoon driver. I want to do mornings.
Yeah. I would like to do a morning show, but I just don't want to, you know, there's certain things. What am I willing to give up to go do it? We were talking about mornings at one point for like going to Atlanta, and I didn't get that gig. And there was a San Diego thing that came up, which didn't get that one. Nobody likes me. I was approached by another company to do mornings in New York, but I couldn't get out of my contract here. We've had chit chats, you know, I've had great conversations with a lot of companies. Cumulus came, you know, a lot of people call me up during this last contract negotiation and we just couldn't get the deal that I wanted or they wanted or whatever for a few things. And Kiss offered me, you know, all the good stuff to stay at Kiss FM doing nights. But I would love to do that. I wouldn't mind doing an afternoon thing at a certain point. But, you know, I guess it's got to be the right situation. But LA has just been really good to me. And a lot of the artists I talk to are in LA. I can kind of see myself going into like a probably morning TV before I would go into morning radio at this point. You know, I do some local stuff for KTLA here in LA from time to time. And that's enjoyable, except for the fact that it's so early. It's ridiculous. I mean, when the alarm goes off at 4, ugh, it's awful. Yeah. It's just terrible. So I have a feeling that if I did that, I would really enjoy it. I think I would enjoy it, but certainly those first few days, I would have probably a little bit of buyer's remorse. Like, oh my God, what if the alarm's going off at 4? What am I doing? Hopefully I'd get used to it after that, but I'd probably have a little buyer's remorse in the early stages. But I guess two things I'm targeting. I want to get into the artist discovery world, whether it be A&R for a label or some sort of A&R, like finding young artists, you know, and helping their careers develop. I think I find that a bit exciting. I've been approached by a few people to do some stuff like in that world. So we'll see if those things take off. And the voiceover animation world, like voices for, you know, animated cartoons or animation or video games and stuff along those lines. And of course, commercial VO. But I'm going to start pushing that a little bit pretty heavy. We just finished the demo. You know, and granted, I've done a lot of voiceovers when it comes to radio, but mainly just commercial endorsements and the radio show itself. But I haven't done any as far as, hey, do a voice for a cartoon. I've never done that. So we put this thing together, and in the world I'm in, you always kind of make your own little funky voices and do this and that and whatever. But to really put it down on tape is it's pretty exciting. And I have a buddy that's really good at it. So he raves on that world. So I'm going to try to jump in that and see if I can get some stuff going. I've got a lot of good contacts. Oh, I'm really connected. So that's hopefully that pays off somewhere in that world, but we'll see.
TV hosting, wouldn't that be a natural for you?
Yeah. Oh God, the show that I want to host now. And I've got my manager. We're reaching out to him. I mean, maybe they already have a host for this show. I don't know. But TV hosting would be, you would think it'd be a no brainer, but it's been very elusive for me to find the right thing. I mean, I've been a judge on a show on NBC once called Fame, which is like an Idol ripoff kind of a thing. And it was cool, but it wasn't a signature show. Clearly we did one season and that was it. That was back in 2003. Cause I did that show with the broken arm after I broke my arm on the radio. So I did that show, judging that show with the broken arm. And that's the same time where I went to the Michael Jackson's Neverland Ranch with basically a broken arm. That all happened with a broken arm. But the show that I want to host, I left that part out. I should have told you that. God, it's a big piece of it. There's a show coming back. Do you remember the old show called Unsolved Mysteries with Robert Stack?
I saw your post on Instagram about that because you were in an episode a long time ago and they brought it back.
Dude, I would love – I mean, once again, that's kind of that paranormal – you know, that's not necessarily a paranormal-based show. There'll probably be some episodes about it, but just a conspiracy junkie in general. You know, who shot Biggie Tupac, JFK, RFK, those conspiracies and whatnot. You know, and just not Zodiac killers. Yeah, Unabombers, they're going to cover that type of stuff, which is right up my alley. But so I would love to do that show. I think that would be perfect for me. Years ago, actually we shot it in San Francisco. All you're doing is reenactments because they're, you know, I was a victim of the Zodiac killer. So I got cast to be this guy that got killed in Vallejo in the car. He like a little lover's lane kind of a thing. We pull up and all of a sudden here comes the Zodiac killer and does his thing. And so we got killed for Unsolved Mysteries. Then we came down to do this NBC event because, you know, just to interview people for NBC, the TV shows later that summer after I did the Unsolved Mysteries episode. And Robert Stack, which a lot of you guys watching aren't going to know who Robert Stack is. Maybe, I don't know. But I see Robert Stack walk into this room. And I thought, oh my God, there he is. Because when we shot it, he's not there. He just does his wraparounds in a studio. But I walked up to him and said, Mr. Stack, my name's JoJo. I got killed on an episode of your Unsolved Mysteries. He goes, well, I hope you died gracefully, young man. And that was it, you know. And I took a picture with him. I can't find the pic. I'm determined to find that pic. It's around here somewhere. Because when I saw that Unsolved Mysteries was coming back, I'm going to send the pic, you know, these pics to, you know, my manager's going to reach out to those guys and say, hey, look, JoJo from KISS, he would love to host this show. Random twist, he did an episode. Here he is getting killed by the Zodiac killer on the original series. And if I can find the picture with Robert Stack, that'd be kind of cool too to give to him. Whether it works or not, we'll see. But that's kind of the angle we're going. If, not to mention, I'm just into that genre. So I would love to host Unsolved Mysteries. I don't know if it's going to make me rich if I got the gig, but it would be a lot of fun to do.
Were you better on that than you were in the Bieber video?
The Bieber video is pretty classic. That was 2 seconds of gold. Oh my God.
Hey, I want to, JoJo, the fame thing, that was 2003. I remember that because there was an artist that I thought was going to win named Harlem Lee, who,
oh, yeah, yeah,
who in a previous lifetime was an artist named Jerry Wu. And I remember him in the early 90s, late 80s. He had a pop song, but he went away. He had a label, came back, and he was on that contest, lied about his age, right?
Oh, I forget his story, but I remember the name Harlem Lee. But I forget all the specifics of it. The only one I bumped into, well, actually, finish your point, is, do you know him?
Well, I don't know him. I just remember him when he first came out, when I first moved to San Jose. I played his song on the radio, and then in 2003, he came out and he did that show. He looked differently, looked a little bit older, but he lied about his age to be on that show. And he was really good, could really sing, but he had a previous recording career and fibbed about his age so he could, you know, try to reinvent himself.
Well, the people that I've kept in contact with from that show, Johnny Wright, of course, the manager of Justin Timberlake, he was one of the judges, and he's still, you know, he managed NSYNC and all those guys. He's managing a band now called In Real Life, which I've seen Johnny got within the last year. The other judge was Carney Wilson of Wilson & Phillips. I haven't seen her in forever. I didn't really know her outside of the show that much. I've seen Debbie Allen here and there. Joey Fatone, obviously. I've seen him around forever. He's a great dude, just a great guy. But Shannon, there's a blonde, if you remember, if nobody else can remember this, but my wife Dina's taking, Dina, see you later.
Bye, Dina.
Dave says bye, Dina. Shannon, who was she was the blonde girl that came in second that year. Johnny Wright signed her, and she eventually became a part of the group Danity Kane, which was Diddy's group on MTV. That making of the band thing. And I'm sitting there with my wife, Dina, watching this show, knowing that Johnny had signed Shannon. And I'm seeing all these girls audition for it. And there's Johnny Wright and Diddy deciding who's going to get it. I'm like, just watch. Shannon's in the group. And because he's not going to bring her on there and not going to be in the group. And plus, she's really good. And sure enough, she's in the group. Just come on. And it just makes it would. There's no way she wasn't going to make it. But I've seen Shannon over the years with Danity Kane. They're doing like sort of a reboot of their group. There's three of them now. I saw her the other day at Universal Studios in Hollywood for Halloween, Universal Studios, Halloween Horror Nights. I saw those girls walking by, and they're kind of getting the band back together and whatnot. So, and I really dig her. She's cool. But so she's the one I've kept in contact with. Well, those are the ones I've kept in contact with most from that show back in the day, but it's been so long ago, I forget a lot of the specifics of it. It was a fun show. I wish the show would have been, you know, I'm looking for my signature show, and it's been very elusive to say the least, but you know, still grinding right along. We'll find something.
Well, I look at your Instagram post from the first of the year, and it says, "Dear Lord, please help me achieve the dreams I've worked so hard for, and let me inspire others to do the same. Believe," Mark 11:24. You've had a remarkable career and certainly an inspiration to a lot of folks, JoJo.
Thank you, Dave. That's really nice, man. Same to you. That's really, really, really nice. And yeah, I've got some goals I want to hit and still working for those, but a lot of good things happen at the same time too. But I guess I enjoy the quest. I think I enjoy the quest to get things as much as, not as much as, but I enjoy the quest along with achieving it. It's something about the, what am I trying to say? It's a, I enjoy the journey as much as the destination in some ways. So yeah, although I shouldn't say it, I want the destination. I want to hit my goal, but it's kind of fun getting there too. I would put it like that.
Yeah, you don't want just a fun journey that goes nowhere. You got to have some place to land.
I don't drive around and do nothing. Yeah, God. Awful.
Do you ever, JoJo, think about? I don't know when you thought about how big Kiss FM was in your career. If you knew back when you were in Charlotte about the legendary call letters, Rick Dees and Big Ron O'Brien and Tim Kelly and Hollywood Hamilton, all these great jocks that worked at that station, how huge it is to be on that frequency, because that's my bucket list. I want to do one shift there and then hang up my headphones.
I knew Kiss was big. I knew it was big before I got here. And I was a fan of Hollywood Hamilton. I mean, of course, Rick Dees, which I worked with Rick. When I first got here, it was Rick Dees. Then Seacrest took over at a certain point. I was a fan of Rick and a fan of Hollywood Hamilton. And when I signed a contract one year, I forget, maybe the second deal I signed, second or third. Hollywood sent me a note. Hamilton sent me a note, said, "Dude, congrats," or whatever he said. And I thought that was really cool because he's a guy that I looked up to, you know, coming up, and he's still doing really well with his Remix Countdown and all that. But to be on that slot in that shift where, you know, some of my favorites were, and I've been doing it for a long time there. I've been on Kiss doing nights longer than anyone's done nights on Kiss ever. I mean, you really think about it like that, it's just, it's crazy. I mean, to really step back and realize how big the call letters of Kiss are and to be on it for that long, it's just, it's kind of surreal when you really think about it. Like, you're making me think about it now. It's pretty nuts, you know, but yeah, it's wild. And I knew before I got here how big Kiss was. But to be on it that long, it's pretty special, no doubt. Super thankful, obviously.
How long can you continue to go?
I don't know if I want to do nights forever, so I want to branch. But I can do radio forever, to be honest with you. I mean, I really could. At some point, I wouldn't mind branching into a talk radio format. I could branch off into, you know, just an afternoon slot, you know. Mornings for the right situation, but that's just really early. I've got other interests too, so I want them all to kind of coexist together. So whatever the best way is to make it all kind of fit together would be, you know, ideal for me. But I could do radio in some form forever, for sure.
Give everybody your social media information, how to reach you.
Sure. Twitter, Instagram, JoJo Wright, JoJo Wright, JoJo Wright, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I think I'm official JoJo Wright. If you search me, you'll see me on there somewhere, you know. YouTube, Adventures of JoJo. Yeah, basically Twitter and Instagram, JoJo Wright. You can find everything.
Yeah.
And that's my meat and potatoes, and I'm pretty active on social, so it's hard to miss me if you look.
You've had such a great run, man. Super proud of you.
Dave, you're awesome. We gotta do some lunch at some point. One of these gotcha. All right. One of these days, we came up there. We went to the Yay area, like two or three summers ago, and we had a ball. We went to the old, I wanted to see, of course, my paranormal obsession. I had to go to the Winchester Mystery House, and saw the movie. You know, got to get the movie, and I loved it, man. The history of the Winchester Mystery House is just crazy. Although it's built up a lot, you know, when I used to live there, it was a little more, you know. It wasn't as, you know, a little more space around it. You could see trees around. Now it's just, there's a 7-Eleven right across the street. It's a little more, you know, it feels like you're in a city around it, where, so it doesn't feel as desolate as it used to. But it was still cool to see the Winchester Mystery House. Then we went up to Napa, did the whole wine thing and all that fun stuff. But yeah, the Bay Area is a special place. It played a really nice role in my career. So we got to do something. One of these days I come up there, let's get some grub.
Sounds good, dude. And you got the new contracts that you're buying.
Damn right. Wait, whoa. You're funny. Done.
You agreed.
Taco Bell it is.
Thanks to JoJo Wright from 102.7 KISS FM. The executive producer of the podcast is Hunter Lewis. You can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, and YouTube. We can't do it without you. Thank you so much for your positive reviews and feedback and making this grow. We leave you with JoJo Wright interacting on his Instagram page, introducing the group Imagine Dragons. Let's just say it didn't go well. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
Hi, I'm JoJo Wright. I'm with the band Puff the Magic Dragon. Hi, I'm JoJo Wright, and I'm with the band How to Train Your Dragon. God! Hi, I'm JoJo Wright, and I'm with the band Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Okay, this is stupid.
I just give me a second. Hey, I'm JoJo Wright. I'm with the band Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
I already told you.
Hi, I'm JoJo Wright, and I'm here with the band Dungeons
stop.
And Dragons.
Just stop. Stop the camera. Stop. It's over.
Yeah! Fuck! You don't even need to do it! I'll get it right!